Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. I've been asked by the Tribeca Film Festival to come and moderate a panel for them after the show today called Visions of History and Truth, Artists in Action After 9/11. And I want to tell you about it because it's free. Yesterday we mistakenly said that there was a price of admission. It is free. And we will be talking about the much talked about film that premiered at the festival last night, that opened the festival, United 93, the real-time depiction of the 9/11 hijacking, the passenger heroism on that flight, and the ultimate crashing of that plane in Pennsylvania. It's also a lot about government failure, much more than has been reported in the press so far. And we're going to have a producer of the film, Lloyd Levin, one of the actors, David Allen Bache, and Anne Hogue, curator of the September 11th documentary project at the Library of Congress. So in case you're interested, it's 1 o'clock this afternoon. I'll be scooting right over there after the show at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center. If you happen to be downtown, it's 199 Chambers Street between West Street and Greenwich Street. Again, 1 o'clock this afternoon. And I did see the movie yesterday, and I thought that we might open the phones right now for a call-in for anyone who saw the premiere last night of United 93. And if you saw it and want to react in any way at all, call us up at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You know, they opened it on four screens at the Lowe's 12-plex on Broadway and 68th Street last night as well for the overflow, even though it doesn't officially open to the general public until Friday. So I think we probably have some of you from those four or five theaters in all who might have seen it yesterday and have an early reaction. 212-433-WNYC. Of course, that same Upper West Side Lowe's was the theater that pulled the trailer for the film after it was too upsetting to many moviegoers last month. And there have been all these questions and controversies, some of them, I think, just ginned up by the media for controversy's sake. The biggest one being, was it too soon to make a film like this? Well, apparently not, because so many of the family members approved of this. If you don't regularly read the New York Post, you might want to open today to, I don't know, it's about page 10 or so, a two-page spread photo of so many family members at the premiere last night with Rudy and Julie Giuliani. But what do you think? Was it too soon about that to comment about that, or with any reaction to United 93 if you have seen it? 212-433-9692. I saw it yesterday at a press screening, and the first thing I would say is that it is very well done. But the scenes on board the plane are very, very hard to take. They are so intense and so nerve-wracking in the way that you would imagine that this film would be. It's like the TV series 24 in a way, only more so, and of course it was real, and you're anticipating the horrific, tragic ending the whole time. So it's gripping, but it's so emotional and so hard to watch for those of us who lived through that day. So I would say see it if you have the stomach for it. See it to pay tribute to the passengers and the crew by immersing yourself in their terror for an hour and a half, if you can handle it. And there's one other big reason to see it, and I'm frankly surprised how little attention this has gotten so far. The big surprise to me was how much this film is not just about the personal heroism and tragedy of Flight 93, but about how the government screwed up at the highest levels. A lot of the film actually takes place outside the airplane in air traffic control and the NORAD command center. And believe it or not, these scenes, to me, were actually much more compelling than the ones on the plane, because we got so much news from those government scenes about aspects of that day that have really been underreported, although officially they've been reported and they're known, about the failure to connect the dots, the failure to communicate, the failure of the highest levels of military command, including the commander-in-chief, to get it quickly about the need to authorize a shoot-down of any hijacked plane still in the air, something that was horrible and awful and almost unthinkable to contemplate at the time, but that apparently people at the command level at NORAD were actively advocating for, because they still had hijacked planes in the air, because they knew the World Trade Center towers had been hit and the Pentagon had been hit. We hear about the deployment in this film of fighter jets that are unarmed. We hear about the deployment of fighter jets in the wrong direction. No one knows where the president is or where the vice president is, who's in this chain of command that they focus on, or where Air Force One is once it takes off. You know, the movie didn't actually have to tell us that the president was reading My Pet Goat during the beginning of the crisis, because it gives us all the context that makes us remember it ourselves. And at the end of the film, I'm going to give this away, so don't listen if you don't want to hear it. There are a few slides of text telling us about the military command being notified of the hijacking after the major events, and of the authorization to shoot down hijacked planes actually being made, but not being passed down the chain to those who actually could have ordered a shoot down on the front line. So besides being a story of heroism and terror, it was a searing indictment of the government, replete with facts that are not widely known and that should not get lost. In fact, it should be central to any discussion of the film, this aspect of the film. So for anyone who saw Flight 93, United 93, that it was originally titled Flight 93, and they changed it, United 93, the lines are open at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, John.
Hi, I'm in the United States Air Force, and I was at the premiere last night, and the reason is because the Air Force fully supported Mr. Greengrass in making this film. So it's interesting to me that your take on it, that it shows the failure of the military. We thought, because he convinced us that we should support the film with technical expertise. In fact, you might be interested, I don't know if you noticed in the credits, there were several Air Force airmen who played themselves in the movie for the Northeast Air Defense.
Oh, you know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they with the full permission of the United States Air Force. It we thought that what he did was he showed, although the dramatization wasn't exactly the way we would have depicted it, because you know there was some lack of knowledge about what specifically happened, so he had to fill in to tell the story in a sensible manner, and we think he did a great job doing that. But what we thought it showed was the very professional efforts of the Air Force and the FAA and everybody to respond to unprecedented events.
Oh, let me be clear. I think that they were showing those people that you say as very competent and working very hard to get it right and being genuine and not being political, but that who was really described as bumbling or worse was the civilian command, who we never see.
Right, and I noticed I heard that you say the little summaries at the end of what some of the things that had happened.
Yeah, what did you think about those?
Well, I thought when it says that the Air Force was or that the military chain of command did get the authorization, and that may speak to what you're saying. The authorization did come through to shoot down planes if needed. What it also said in there was that the choice was made to avoid passing that order down, because at the time they didn't know which planes may need to be shot down, because it was so confusing and it happened so quickly. They didn't want going out and saying shoot down any civilian passenger airliner that you see, because they had to get full identification. And this all happened, as you said, you know, within almost real time, 90 minutes.
Yes.
And so what it showed was the order did come through. They worked very hard to get that order in a pretty short amount of time.
Yes.
And this is not to defend anything. What we're saying is we're really happy with the depiction, which was fairly accurate as well as we can show it, of a lot of people doing the best they could in that sort of situation.
Do you disagree then, or were you unhappy with the fact that that text went up as it did at the end? Because there is, I wouldn't even say an implied, but a stated criticism of not passing along that authorization to shoot. It's that text is worded as a criticism of the way it was handled. Don't you think?
I personally didn't read it that way.
You didn't read it that way.
I read it as a statement of fact.
Uh-huh.
They got the authority, and it was not passed down. And those are the kinds of decisions that in the military you have to make on the spot. And, you know, it would have been horrific to shoot down one of those other thousands of airliners that were in the air over the United States that day that wasn't one of the four that were hijacked. And those are the sort of real-time decisions they're making.
Imagine if somebody had shot down. And we saw in the air traffic control scenes how confusing it was as to which planes were actually hijacked.
Exactly.
And how difficult it was to sort all that out. But you know why I thought, and maybe I got it wrong, but you know why I thought it was put in there at the end as such a criticism, and I guess I'll get to ask the producer at this panel in about an hour.
Yeah, please do.
But the very positive depiction of, I don't know how to describe his title, was he the kind of the control, the site commander at that NORAD control center, who seemed very competent, and he kept advocating for the authorization. Get me to the authorization to shoot down these hijacked planes if I need it. What do you mean you can't get through to the president or the vice president? I need that authorization to shoot down. So after all of that, and after he was depicted so positively, I thought that the text then, at very least, strongly implied a criticism of the fact that the authorization was not passed to that man.
Well, and you use the words failure of the military and failure of some of the federal things. Like I said, the Air Force, we supported this because we thought what they were showing, and you know, you read it one way, we did see it another, that they in fact did get the authority, that it wasn't, they didn't get it in time, and they didn't understand the events in time to actually go ahead and authorize and try to take out those planes. And here's one quick example. You said that how the fighters were sent up in the wrong direction. That's one of the places where I cringed in the movie, because that's not quite what happened. It's one of those things. They didn't know which direction the hijacked aircraft were going. They were having trouble keeping them on the scope, and they weren't squawking back to the tower, and so they couldn't tell exactly where they were going. So as you saw in the movie, the decision was made to launch scramble aircraft from Langley Air Force Base and from Otis Air National Guard Base. And they had the fighters in the air, but since they don't know which way the planes were going, what they had to do was put them into what we call an orbit. They fly in a racetrack pattern, so they're up there, they're already in the general vicinity, and then they are vectored by someone on the ground to say, oh, now we know where the plane's going, now you can go intercept it. So, in fact, they were flying in the wrong direction, but that was because they were going up into a standard orbit because they didn't know which direction to go to. That just shows the incredible confusion that everybody was dealing with at the time, and the Air Force didn't think that it shows it in negative light. It shows sort of how we talk about things like the fog and friction of war.
Yes.
This is what I think what everyone was facing.
John, thank you. I could talk to you all day, but I really appreciate your call, and hope you'll call us again.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to go ahead if you talk to the producer, Mr. Greengrass. We had a great working relationship with them, and we really enjoyed and thought they honored the people involved in that day.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
John in Homedale, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good, John. How you doing?
Good. I'm calling because I'm looking forward to seeing this movie. One of the things, though, that I find that I want to be a little critical of is this issue of whether it's too soon or not too soon.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that this criticism, at least from my perspective, is being advocated by people who weren't there in the midst of the crisis, as I was, or not to denigrate the pain and suffering they went through, family members who have now been sort of designated the spokesman for all things 9/11, who were not there at the time either. I'm one of the 11 people that survived on the floor the plane hit on the 78th floor of the second tower.
Mm.
I know exactly what happened. I know exactly what went on. I saw the heroism and bravery of ordinary people in the midst of an absolute trauma and crisis, who you don't hear too much about on the media. And I would probably say that to the one of us, we would all want to see this.
I remember when the Bruce Springsteen CD, The Rising, came out, I think it was summer of 2003, and there was a lot of discussion in the media because that was so good at, being a work of art about the day of and the immediate aftermath of 9/11. And there was all this talk in the media, blah, 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 about why there wasn't more relevant to 9/11 art being done at that late date, two full years after the day. And now all the blah, blah, blah is about whether it's too soon, when obviously the overwhelming feeling of the family members and of you as a survivor in that situation feel like, you know, it should be done. I think one of the important roles of this movie is as a historical document, and the fact that it was made by people who did live through that day, rather than being made a generation later by people who weren't as close to it.
I absolutely agree with that, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Thank you for your call, John. Virginia in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yes, hi, Brian. I saw the movie on Monday night at a I go to a film series.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it on Monday night,
mm-hmm.
and four of the actors were there too, and I found the movie riveting, exactly as you described it, as you were talking. I said, oh, those are all the things I was going to say. But what I found most impressive about the movie was the meticulous, absolutely meticulous care that Paul Greengrass gave to the film. He had the consent of all the United 93 passenger families without exception. And that there was so much respect for the event and the people on the plane. And what was also very interesting in terms of how the film was made, it was done improvisationally. It was not scripted.
Is that true?
Yes. I don't know about the air traffic control part or the NORAD scenes, but the scenes on the plane, each character got a each actor got a packet.
I'm going to ask, and I'm going to go so I can get at least one more call in before we run out of time. I've kind of lingered on a few calls here, but I'm going to ask the producer about that. It would seem hard, very hard, to improvise that scene, especially when they're trying to be as historically accurate as possible without the actual dialogue. But I'll ask that question and report back. Richie in Brooklyn, you're going to get our last 30 seconds. Thank you for calling.
How you doing? How's it going today?
All right.
I just want to say that while maybe the NORAD scenes,
yeah,
and the air traffic controller scenes were,
yes,
as accurate as they could make them,
uh-huh,
everything that happened on that plane, nobody knows what happened on that plane. Nobody. Nobody was there. Nobody's alive. So that's like, you know, that's like, I think, feel like that it's just playing on the emotions of the families. You know, the ones that felt that the people were heroes, it just helped them get along. But nobody knows what happened on that plane. No matter how many people call from their cell phones or whatever, you don't know why that plane crashed. You don't know what happened in that cockpit. And
Richie, I have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thanks to all of you who called. And again, that panel, if you're in the neighborhood, I realize it's short notice, is 1 o'clock at the Tribeca Performing Arts Center, Chambers Street between Greenwich and West. And I'll talk to you here tomorrow. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.